Father Roderick, and you're listening to my weekly show. I'm back from vacation in Spain, which was wonderful. The weather, the people, the country, the food. But it's back to the usual work, and that may also be the case for you as well. I don't know if you're still on vacation or not, but here's my show. And as always, this episode is brought to you by my patrons over at patreon.com/FatherRoderick. You can read more information on how to become a patron. It's people that give me a small donation, and if enough people do that, it helps me finance my work. And as a thank you, I give them an extra podcast every week. So there's the after show, which I record always after I record this one. And it's a more informal show. I can answer questions, comments from people. Sometimes I will show you stuff I talk about stuff that I can't yet talk about on my regular show. So you'll get a little bit of like inside knowledge sometimes. But it's just a thank you for my patrons. And again, if you want to find out more, then by all means, take a look at patreon.com/FatherRoderick.
Do you know what's going on?
This is what's happening in your world.
Face it, Catholics rule. We got Boston, South America, the good part of Ireland, and we're making serious inroads in Mozambique, baby.
You've taken your first step into a larger world.
If you've listened to my previous podcast, that one was recorded in Spain while I was going out for a walk, and recorded both an episode of The Walk and an episode of this podcast. And so I told you what was going on during my vacation. And in case you missed it, or you didn't have time to listen to it, or you're new to this show, I just had a wonderful 12-day vacation in Spain with three other priests. We know each other from Rome. We go on vacation every year. And sometimes that's a great vacation. Sometimes it's a little bit of a disappointment. Like last year when we went to France and we were in the middle of nowhere and the cottage that we rented was pretty terrible. So I was a little bit apprehensive when it comes to this vacation in Spain. But as you may have heard in my previous podcast, it turned out to be a great success. We were staying in a nice house that friends of Father Henry rented, or not even rented us. We didn't have to pay for it, but they borrowed it to us so we could stay there for 12 days. And it was located not far from Valencia in Spain, on the East Coast, in a nature reserve. And it was just amazing. Wonderful weather, great nature surrounding us. And we went to see a ton of things. Actually, did film quite a bit with my phone. And as usual, once I came back, I had so much work that I just couldn't find the time to edit all that together. But that's usually what happens when I'm back from vacation. There is immediately a ton of work that needs to be done. And hopefully I'll find some time this weekend or in the next week now that everything is back on track. Speaking of which, lots of things happening very soon here in the Netherlands. The most important one, and I announced this in the location where I live this morning when the volunteers were having a cup of coffee, I'm going to move. And not going to move to another parish, not even going to move from this place when it comes to my work, but for my apartment, I'm going to move to another rectory in our parish, which is the rectory where previously our pastor lived. But since the pastor was moved to another parish in Arnhem, since then the rectory has been empty. And I live here in another rectory next to the Eucharistic Center. That's the kind of the name that our bishop gives to the churches that have a central function, where there is a Eucharist every week, and where we try to make sure that you find the full, let's say, how'd you say, like the full extent of everything the church has to offer. And then we have these other church locations. And I live here on the first floor of the rectory, and the Triduo offices are down the stairs, so on the regular, how do you say that, like the where you enter the house. And we share that space with the parish. And over, especially this last year, since this is one of the, let's say, more active church locations, there have been a ton of volunteers that are roaming the place every day. And just last year, we opened our offices here down the stairs. And the combination of that caused, let's say, a side effect that I'm literally living on top of my work. And whether it is parish work or the media work, whenever I go downstairs, I'm immediately confronted with work. And so it's also very hard to step away from it. And we all need that from time to time, to just close the door, shut the office, close down the computers, don't look at your inbox anymore, and just step back from it. And for me, the only escape was to go out running, because everybody understands that when I'm running, I won't, you know, I'm unavailable for, well, how long do I run nowadays? 2 hours, 2.5 hours. But then as soon as I was back home, you know, there are always volunteers here. There are meetings down the stairs. So we have got the team, the Tridio team working here. So when the parishioners over at the other location asked me if I was interested in moving to the directory that was now empty, I was like, well, I didn't really give it any thought before, but now that you mention it, yeah, why not? Plus, with Tridio, we've been expanding our activities more and more. We were going to produce another 10 episodes for TV this year, and we're working on expanding towards something that looks more and more like a real Catholic channel for the Netherlands next year, plus all the international work that I do, both video and audio. And in order to keep doing that and to keep growing, we need to get more on hand people, more people that help me produce. And we already have a team of three, but I've always thought of Tridio growing towards a team of 5 or 6 people. Now, of course, that won't happen immediately, but it's definitely in the planning for next year to expand, to at least get 2 more people on board, perhaps not full-timers, but at least to get a little bit more expertise and also people that can also make programs. I don't have to be the single face of Tridio or the single presenter. We need to bring in new people and younger people than I am, new talents, and also more diversity in terms of qualities and talents. But in order to do that, we already know that with these 3 small rooms that we have down the stairs here, we'll need more space. And so now that I'm going to move to the other rectory, the upstairs apartment becomes available. And so we are in talks with the parish to also start using that for Tridio. Now, I'm in a parish, and you know how that works. You're in talks with some people, and then you tell them, please don't tell the parishioners yet. Don't, you know, keep this to yourself. Because otherwise you get all these hearsay stories or, oh, our pastor is leaving and he's going to be moved to another parish and we lose him forever, whatever. So I told them to be discreet. And so last Sunday, I go to one of the other churches in my parish and everyone is like, so you're going to move? That's when I knew that, you know, I'd better just tell people that I was going to move. It's not a really big deal because I'm just moving from one location in the parish to another location. Plus, I'll still be working here 5 or 6 days per week when I'm doing my work for Tridio. So I think in reality, not much will change other than that when I leave my work here, when I'm done podcasting or I'm done editing, I can take my bike. It's about, 3 miles, I think, a bike ride to the other rectory. But then I'll be away from my work. And it's in a small, what used to be a small village. It's now kind of gobbled up by the city itself. But it's a really nice rectory. It's big. It's bigger than what I have currently, which is already way too big for me. But on the other hand, it's kind of old-fashioned and it's a bit run down. There have been 2 pastors living there, and before them there were sisters living there. And when the first pastor moved in, they did renovate a little bit, but not everything. So I took a tour of the house yesterday, and the first thing that I noticed was that there was a bathroom that was really from the 70s with green tiles and lots of, you know, the walls were leaking and just hadn't been cleaned since forever. And the same was true for the toilet. That really literally looked like something from 50 years ago. And it's these brown tiles, and it looked so clunky and old and just weird. So I think some work will need to be done, and I guess it's because that priest was appointed in the parish, and nobody really expected him to be nominated here. So I just don't think they had time. Then he was moved from our parish to another. He became an Episcopal vicar within a year, and then we had another pastor who also had to move in right away. So I just think that they just didn't have time to kind of clean it up a little bit. Now, I have very low expectations, and I, as long as I have a place to sleep and a place to pray and a place to eat and, you know, sit at my computer, you know, give me a hobbit hole and I'm happy. But in this case, it's basically just a bit of cleaning up, perhaps a fresh coat of paint. That will probably take a few weeks. And so I hope to be able to move in October. And in a way, I kind of really like to go to that part of the town. I've been here for, what is it? I moved to this rectory in 2003. So I've been living here for 15 years on this location. And so just a change of space, of you know, area, I think will do me good. Plus, it's a little bit on the outskirts of the city, which I also like. Because as you know, I'm a runner. I like biking. I like to go out for long walks. This is on the totally different side of the city. So from there, it's kind of on the east, northeastern side of the town. You're very quickly in kind of the polar side of the country, where you have, you know, these parts that used to be underwater, and they created new land, and it's very different from the woods that you have on this side of the city. So I'm looking forward also to be able to hike and to run in a different environment. I kind of know this place because I've been training for marathons for the past 10 years now. Speaking of which, marathon that's also coming up in October. I'll talk a little bit more about that in the health segment of this show. And, well, what else is new? Just had a good talk this morning with some more people that we're bringing in for editing, for, you know, the production of the TV episodes. There's a lot going on, which I can't really talk about yet because it's still kind of in the works, but it's looking good. I'm feeling more than ever that I'm doing the work that I love to do. And it's really making a difference, and it's growing, and I love to tell stories, and to do that on a professional level that is beyond anything that I've been able to do in the past just is a super big motivation. All right, let's talk about other people's video productions here.
How do you not like movies?
They're predictable. Like, the guy gets the girl, and that kid sees dead people, and Darth Vader is Luke's father.
Not liking movies is like not liking puppies.
They're fine. I just get bored and never make it to the end.
You know, you need a movie education. You need a moviecation. I'm going to give it to you.
Well, I'm back home, so that means I can watch some more TV. One of the biggest downsides of being on vacation, in Spain, and then also doing the youth camp with the Archdiocese, was that I've been on a diet, an internet diet, for 3 weeks. I only had mobile data, so what is it, 3G? Not the fastest internet. And you know, for regular use, my data bundle was quite all right. I usually don't do streaming where I am, or I don't watch videos on my phone. But when you're away for 3 weeks, and especially in Spain, there was no Wi-Fi, nowhere. And there, even 3G was very spotty because we were like located on a hill and there was another mountain range in front of us. And the signal gets bounced around so much that when I was sitting on a balcony, I would have internet, and then a minute later, nothing. So you'd have to disconnect, reconnect with the tower, then you'd have a minute of internet, and then it would disconnect again. It would go like that for 2 weeks. In Germany, I had a little bit better internet, But I had no time because I was like, we were doing like 12 to 14 hour work days there to run that camp because we're just a small group of volunteers. So it was very intense. So one thing that I haven't been able to do at all was to watch TV, to listen, even not even listening to podcasts, let alone watch movies. So one of the advantages of being home again is I have Netflix and I can watch some TV. And that's what I've been doing. I haven't had the opportunity yet to go to the movies. I'm still looking forward to seeing the new Mission Impossible movie. And is there another movie currently? There's another action movie that I wanted to see. Let me see what that is on the website of my local theater. It's kind of a low season when it comes to movies. All the big blockbusters were launched at the beginning of summertime. There's The Meg, which is kind of a shark movie, but in this case, it's a massive big shark. I kind of like shark movies. Some people hate them, but I kind of like them. There's L5. No idea what that is. That looks like something with caveman or something. I have not heard anything about that. The Equalizer 2 with, is it Denzel Washington? That looks okay. That's probably a movie that they'll check out. Slender Man, that's horror. I don't like horror. The Spy Who Dumped Me, meh. And that's about it. There's some other movies, but not really movies I care for. So right now I've been focusing on TV. And one of the things I told you in my last podcast and in the after show last week, if you're a patron, a subscriber, I talked about the locations in Spain that we visited where they filmed Game of Thrones. And it's been a massive motivation for me to pick up Game of Thrones again and start watching more seasons because where we were, that little city on the peninsula, which is called Peñíscola, that was such a gorgeous place. I mean, I didn't care at all for the city around it because it's a, you know, one of those tourist mass cities where just people lay on the beach. I don't understand why people want to be on the beach during their vacation. It's such a waste of time. The peninsula was gorgeous. It had very rich history. I wonder if I had already been there when I recorded my previous podcast episode. Perhaps not. I did film quite a bit. But the cool thing is that is where one of the anti-popes lived, or anti-popes, you know, at one point in history, there were two popes. And what very brief moment, even three popes at the same time. And only one, of course, was the true pope. And the other ones were like the result of quarrels and mutiny, basically. Well, one of those popes lived actually on the peninsula for a while. And there was a conclave that took place in the basement of that castle there. And of course, it was an illegal conclave. And it was so funny to kind of discover that part of church history. I mean, I reread about it. We heard about it when we were studying theology. But it's totally different from actually being on location. And it was so funny to see all these tourists taking selfies with the statue of the Pope. And then we would tell them, do you know that's not a real pope? That's actually one of the anti-popes. They were like, oh, okay. But also the location. I was so curious to see how they used that fortress or that castle in Game of Thrones because, of course, it's a tourist location. So you've got a lot of restaurants and cars and tourists. So I want to know how they made that, how they turned that into a part of the whatever the country is called where Game of Thrones takes place. So, but that, all that takes place in season 6. I'm currently watching season 5. So it will take me another, 12 episodes before I finally get to the scenes on the locations that I visited. But I want to see it. And it's one of the things that I like about Game of Thrones. There are a lot of things I dislike about Game of Thrones, especially. There are two things that I dislike. Let's start with that. First of all, there is so much violence. It's very graphic. And it's kind of differs from episode to episode. There's some more mellow episodes where nobody gets killed, but then there are these brutal, brutal slaughteries, and it's like, ah, I can't watch that. So it's very graphic, very violent. And the second thing I don't like about Game of Thrones is this undercurrent of anthropological pessimism. And what do I mean by that? It's like nobody is really good. There is no one you can root for, because either you root for someone and it turns out that that person perverts or starts doing horrible things, or, you know, becomes very morally objective. So there's no real good guy or good girl in Game of Thrones. They all have their flaws. But it's not just flaws. It's like people just are evil. And it's almost as if, whenever you just start to root for someone, it's like, oh, I hope that that person will, you know, somehow be able to turn the tide. That person gets killed. And that happens all the time. So the people you care for and you root for, they get killed. And the bad guys survive. So, I don't know. I wish there was a little bit more optimism. And it's almost as if Martin tries to convey his view on mankind, that there's no good in this world. And if there's good, it's either going to die, it's going to self-destruct, or it's going to be perverted. And as a Catholic, there's a lot in me that resists that pessimistic view of mankind. So anyway, that's what I don't like about Game of Thrones. What I do like is that it's the world building. It's just how immense the world is that they create, and how believable, even on screen, it is, because they have been filmed. Of course, there's a lot of CGI in there, just like Lord of the Rings, etc. But there's also a lot of set construction, and a lot of this stuff takes place in real environments. And yeah, maybe fake snow, but it's not computer generated snow. And yeah, the dragon flying around, maybe CGI, but the part of the castle where the dragon lands, that's a real castle. And they went to so many different places in Europe, mostly, to film that I have great respect for these actors that are part of a very complicated story with so many different layers. And they've been filming literally from Iceland to Spain to, I don't know, parts of Morocco or whatever. When I was in Sevilla, we went to this Moorish castle where they also filmed a lot of Game of Thrones. I think it's in one of the earlier seasons. And so you see there was this beautiful garden, because during the Islamic time in Spain, they were masters at irrigation and turning what was used to be a very dry, hot city, and they would create these oases and these beautiful gardens. And a lot of these gardens are still there, so they use that as a natural environment for these lush environments in the story of Game of Thrones. And just walking there is like, it gives you a new appreciation for the beauty of these locations. It's fun. You kind of walk around. And in Sevilla, not only did you have locations that were used as set pieces for Game of Thrones, but there was also this palace that we visited that was used in, was it Attack of the Clones? Like I think the second prequel. It's the kind of the summer residence of Queen Padme Amidala or something like that. And it's a brief sequence that we see in the movie. But I walked there and here's like, oh, Anakin Skywalker used to roam these places. I don't know. It just gives so much more weight. And it's funny because, of course, the real history has much more weight than this fictional story that has been filmed there. But it's kind of like you're kind of stepping into a world that you only knew from your imagination. And all of a sudden, you can touch these places, you can see it. And I know that once I'm going to see that sixth season of Game of Thrones, I'm going to yell at the screen like, I was there! Oh, that palm tree is fake! Where are the cars? So, it's going to be awesome. Doctor Who, finally on Netflix in the Netherlands. They brought us season 10. And I can't believe how long we have We had to wait for this. There's no other way for us to watch Doctor Who over here in the Netherlands. I don't even think the DVD is available or the Blu-rays. And of course, you can watch it on the BBC, but I don't have television. So I have to watch everything streaming. So I've been begging, literally, I've been tweeting to the Dutch Netflix account, the whatever team is monitoring that. It's like, oh, when are we going to get Doctor Who season 10? And then they reacted like, yeah, we're wondering too. We'll let you know as soon as we have it. Well, finally, it's here. And I can't wait to see it and to finally listen to all those podcasts about season 10 that I've been trying to ignore, and I didn't want to get spoiled. So I'm in for a few weeks of Doctor Who. And then, well, that's it, I think. Oh, speaking of Doctor Who, did you hear that Matt Smith, who played the 11th Doctor, has landed a role in Star Wars Episode 9? We have had a couple of these casting announcements recently of well-known actors. And it makes me very curious. Like, whoa, we get Matt Smith. And Matt Smith, of course, for Doctor Who fans, he's the 11th Doctor. For a lot of other people that watch Netflix, he's like one of the main roles in The Crown. And he's amazing in The Crown as well. He's a great actor. A bit quirky, a bit strange. But it's definitely a high-level, high-quality, A-grade actor. So I don't think he's going to get a Stormtrooper role. like what we saw sometimes. Like oh, that Stormtrooper was, what's his name, James Bond actor. And then you never know because he's wearing a helmet. So in this case, I think he's going to land a slightly more important role. What surprised me is that we get these casting announcements this late in the game, because don't forget, they're already shooting episode 9. The script is done. The story is wrapped up. And we don't know it, which is... I want to see how this ends. And at the same time, I was like, just don't tell me right away. I just want to kind of be in this in-between. I love not knowing. There's this anticipation. It's kind of like the Catholic concept of Advent or Lent. It's like you're already working towards something, but you're not there yet. And so there's this tension, this anticipation, this is the space in which you can speculate and let your imagination go wild. And so if Matt Smith is going to be in episode 9, who's he going to be? Is he going to be one of the bad guys? Because he's British, so he's probably on some Star Destroyer, but perhaps not. Rey is also played by a British actress, so could also be that he's one of the good guys. Is he going to be a Jedi? Is he an alien? Who knows? I want to know, and I don't want to know, because I want to... The advantage of being in this era of Star Wars is that we know that the story will continue. And after The Last Jedi, there are so many loose ends. And you want to have a satisfactory conclusion to that. And we know that the conclusion is there. It's in J.J. Abrams' mind and script. We don't know it yet. And to me, that in a certain way, it's much more comforting than what will happen next after this trilogy is done. Because episode 9 will mark the end of the Skywalker saga. We know that for sure. And then we get... What else do we get? Rian Johnson is writing a new trilogy, and he says, I want this to be completely independent of what people know about Star Wars. It's going to be a different place, a different time perhaps, different characters, no more Skywalkers. What will remain of Star Wars when you strip away the familiar ingredients that made Star Wars Star Wars? And I totally understand that they can't go on forever with the Skywalker saga. That's what the novels tried to do. You know, what now is the legendary, extended universe. It's no longer canon. I think one of the things that kind of used it up almost was that they insisted on on everything having a link back to the Skywalkers. And I think that's a mistake. The world is much bigger. It's like faith, and like religion. We've got 2,000 years of Christianity, and before that, we've got thousands of years of faith that evolved, etc. So there are so many different stories. The Bible is a big book, and it covers centuries and centuries of stories. I think if you want to create a mythology, you have to make sure that you kind of follow that path and expand. And if the force is the unifying theme, I think it's one of the things that Rian Johnson tried to convey at the end of episode 8, is the force is no longer limited to people from one family. It's the force will work in other people as well. It's like Anakin. Anakin came literally out of nowhere. Shmi Skywalker had no husband, and Anakin was born, but there was no father. At least the Force was the father. See the similarities with the biblical narrative. So if the Force has been able to do that with Anakin, then why wouldn't the Force do that again in another era, in another area of the universe? And, you know, if you use that as a metaphor of what we read in the Bible, you've got the Holy Spirit who is working in history, not just from, you know, the moment that Jesus talks to us about the Holy Spirit. The Holy Spirit is eternal because the Holy Spirit is God. And so the Holy Spirit was at work also before Jesus, and he's still working. So if the Force is kind of a little bit of a weak analogy to the Holy Spirit, because of course the Holy Spirit is personal, whereas the Force is an impersonal force. But if you use the Force as that actor in a certain way, that moves things, that brings things in motion, that the driving force of literally of the stories in the Star Wars universe, then you can do anything. As long as you keep those principles of the Force clear and consistent with what we've seen before, then I don't really mind them going to another century or another corner of the universe. But the thing that worries me is that we don't know what the quality of the storytelling is going to be. And people are divided about Johnson's contribution to the Star Wars universe. So I have confidence. I think it'll be good. But a lot of people that have very strong opinions. What I don't want is the Star Wars fandom, the world around Star Wars, becoming yet another place where the only thing that people do is fighting each other. There is so much fighting going on in this world, whether it's in politics, right now in the church, in society. There is so much division and hatred, and people are using words to destroy, to break down, instead of to build up. And for me, science fiction, fantasy, movies, games, books, they've always been these safe havens where you can step away from all the wars and the tension in your day-to-day life and learn about worlds where, you know, you learn that there are other approaches And of course, it's called Star Wars. So there are wars in Star Wars as well. And if there would be nothing of tension, you wouldn't have a story. But it's also a world where, in a certain way, things are simplified. Where ultimately what really matters is the choices that people make, not how many armies they have or how powerful their voice is. But are you able to do good with the Force? Or if you move to another universe, Harry Potter, you've got magic. It's kind of similar to the Force. It's a fictional source of energy. And also in Harry Potter, what matters is what do people do with that magic? Do they use it for good, to protect people, especially the weak? Or are they using that for evil, following Voldemort or whatever evil bad guy will happen next in the Harry Potter world? And that shows us a mirror. It helps us reflect on our own place in life and our own choices. you know, what do I do with the talents that have been given to me? I may not have the force, the you know, being able to move objects and summon the lightsaber. I may not be able to, you know, wave a wand and say, expecto patronum, and then things will start to happen. But I do have talents. In a way, we do have something that is akin to magic and the force and whatnot. We have a spiritual power. We especially baptized, have been given the Holy Spirit, and the Holy Spirit is an energy that is not it's not ours. Just like the force in magic, in a certain way, it's an external force, but it's been granted to us as a gift, so that we use it for good and to help people. But we can also use our talents for our selfish purposes, which kind of gives me a narrative bridge to our next segment. And let's go there anyway, since I'm already on the topic. Let's visit the Peculiar Bunch and talk about the mess in the church right now.
Catholics rock!
Here in the Peculiar Bunch, or at the Peculiar Bunch, we're always talking about stuff that happens in this Catholic strange world.
Catholics can be a peculiar bunch. No meat on Friday.
No meat? What do they eat? Light bulbs?
I think a lot of people would qualify the Catholic Church not just a peculiar bunch nowadays, but an evil bunch. It's should be abolished.
Man, you guys got more crazy rules than Blockbuster Video.
Now, of course, I'm not telling you anything new. You didn't live under a rock for the past few weeks. But the Catholic Church is facing one of its biggest crises of the past centuries, and I'm not exaggerating. The whole abuse scandal that had started, of course, decades ago, the actual abuse, but the ramifications and the price that is being paid for the damage of the infidelity of so many priests and bishops and people that were supposed to act on behalf of God, but did exactly the opposite and acted sometimes with diabolical evilness. The price is what we're paying today. And the effects came to light in the Pennsylvania report. There is this new crisis. I wonder if it happened already when I was in Spain, when I was recording my previous episode. But the whole Vigano letter that he wrote, 11 pages, full of accusations, basically asserting that Pope Francis knew about McCarrick's abuse and yet covered it up, which is a very, very serious allegation, and also implicates a lot of other people in the Vatican. And it's creating a turmoil that even just a apart from whether, you know, what is true and what is perhaps speculation or insinuation or emotion, it does plunge the Catholic Church in a worldwide crisis. And the battleground is the media. That's where you see people fighting each other over, out of anger, out of frustration, and a lot of that anger, of course, is justified. And I think the primary reason why people should be angry, and I'm not just talking about people outside of the Catholic Church, I'm also talking about myself and my fellow Catholics and my fellow priests and fellow bishops that are mad that other people that were supposed to be part of this church that is meant by Jesus to do good did exactly the opposite and destroyed lives and caused irreparable damage to generations. And so I'm angry as well. But what the danger of anger is that it is an emotion that that can also obfuscate the mind. It can help. It can reason flies out of the window often when we're angry. Let's be honest. When you're really mad and you start to slam doors and yell things and say things, and then later on you regret it because you're angry. And it's very hard to blame people for that. But I think when I've been thinking a lot. You know, what is my own position? And am I going to join the many people that have written blog posts and ranted online and attack people? And are... I've opted for prudence, which is a virtue. Prudence is not being, you know, cowardly, you know, shying away. And it's just like, I have nothing to do with this. No, I have everything to do with this because it's my church where this has happened. It's my community that is facing, first of all, the victims, and it has to do something for them. And it's also, I'm part of this church that has to change. This should never happen. It should have never happened. It should never happen. But that can only be, I can only say that when I'm also acting and doing what I can to make sure that this never happens again. I can't change everything, but I can do my part. I can play my part. So in that respect, it's definitely something that I am involved in, and I need to act and I need to do something. But when it comes to expressing my anger, I'm always a bit wary of these reactions, and I see a lot of that in my timeline on Twitter and on Facebook, of people that are angry and then start perhaps to say things that they may regret later on, and or they start pointing fingers. It's this very, very big temptation to simplify things. This is a very serious crisis, a very horrible, would you say this? It's like an implosion almost of what the church should stand for. And that never has just one single simple cause. It's what we want. We want simple causes. We like the world to be black and white. And then we always assume that we're, you know, part of the good guys. And it's them. It's that. If you change that, then everything is going to be all right. That is never true in history. When you're dealing with these complex issues, the causes are also complex. And so you have to be careful not to reduce the problem to simple causes, because you're fooling yourself and you're not really helping anyone. You're not helping the victims. You're not helping the church. What I try to have as an attitude is an attitude of prudence, which means patience, first of all. Facts first. I think that's extremely important. When Vigano's letter came out, immediately people were like all up in arms. And you see, I knew it. This Pope is evil and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking, didn't we learn anything from previous situations where popes were attacked, where the church was attacked? That it was never simple, it was never black and white. It's always more nuanced than you think. There are a lot of things that we don't know. We don't have all the facts. We have accusations. We don't have proof for a lot of those accusations. Doesn't mean that there is no proof, but it means that I have to be careful with my judgment, and that I have to press for, and a lot of people have done this, and that's definitely something that I can, that I'm in favor of. Have people examine this, check the facts, check the allegations. The truth is something we should never be afraid of. The truth will set you free. And so, but let's search for the truth and not stop at my impression of, you know, based on the limited information that the media feeds me. We should know better than that. The media can capture, and I know there are a lot of conscientious journalists that try to do the best, but it's almost always fragmentary. And it takes time, especially for these complex situations, to reveal all the dimensions. And I think the other risk of being too quick with your judgment and to, you know, rant is that it may actually change our focus from what is the most important thing right now, and that's the victims. That's the people that are now finally being heard, that are able to tell their story. And let's not forget, these are the stories that we know. There are so many more stories that nobody knows yet. Victims that may now, only now, start to realize this is what I've been going, this is the hell that I've, what I read, the hell that these people have gone through, that's my hell. And I've never been able to talk about it. And there was no one who believed me, or I thought that no one would believe me. And so there are even way more victims that are now starting this journey where the suffering will come back, where they are going to look for healing, for that's where our care should be. That's where our first energy should be. And of course we need to help the Holy Spirit purge the church. Of course, that's one of the things that we need to make sure is that it never happens again. But it's almost as if now in this online war, it feels like a war. People are pointing at each other as arch enemies, as you're a heretic. No, you're a heretic. You're with the bad guys. No, you're with the bad guys. That's the kind of division that only one will benefit truly from, and that's the devil. That's what he does best. It is to drive a wedge through human relations and to distract us from the things where our heart should be, and that is to try to heal, try to repair, try to be with the victims, and instead, you know, put all your energy into this online fighting, and like the best way to go is the search for truth, and the search for truth, you need to be level-headed for that. You need to step away from your emotions. I'm not saying that emotions are not justified, but they can obfuscate your judgment. And so we need a certain patience. It needs a certain amount of time. It needs qualified people. And of course, we need to all be very vigilant that, you know, when we're going to examine what truly happened and verify these allegations, we need to make sure it happens. We need to know how someone like McCarrick, and if you read the stories about him right now, you're like, why did no one ever think about what was going on here? It's when you hear the things he said, his behavior in his later years, it was decadent. And not just on the part where he abused other people, but also his entire lifestyle was all about vanity and glory and him being a VIP. It's like, did no one think twice? Is like, why is this guy a cardinal again? Why do we? One of the virtues I think we need to nourish and value in our church is fraternal correction. It's when you see something that is really not good, you have to correct your brother or your sister. And you have to do that, of course, with the ultimate goal of changing that person, converting that person back to the light. Like Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader, you know, there is still good in you. That has to always be the motivation for when we correct and we try to correct someone or something. It's always like there is still good, and that good has to win. And my correction, my criticism, my anger has to serve the purpose of bettering the situation and converting people back to the light. That should always be our motivation. And as soon as you notice that your anger is taking over, but there's no longer this desire for the good of someone else, then you're on the path of the dark side. That's when, it's those moments in Return of the Jedi where Luke Skywalker loses it. And anger takes over, and the Emperor is like, good, good. It's just such a fitting metaphor of how we work as human beings. If we let anger take over our hearts without at the same time praying for our enemies, praying for the people that have fallen, but still believing that God can convert any heart, if we give up on that, then our anger becomes destructive. And perhaps even auto-destructive, because anger can also hurt and pervert our hearts. And so one of the other things that I think you need to have as an attitude is always ask yourself, what can I do? And it's easy to fall into this, online activism, which is basically just finger pointing. Like, look at me being virtuous because I condemn using my Twitter feed as this lightsaber to strike down my enemies. How is that going to change the world? What is the much better use of your energy and your time is look in the mirror and ask yourself, so, okay, what is wrong with me? And how can I help? How can I help? How can I help by converting, by dedicating myself, rededicating myself again to God, trying to live the life that I wish that these perpetrators had lived? So it's easy to condemn, but are you living the best life you can live? Are you that close to God? And if not, convert. Prayer is taking time to put yourself in the perspective of God and to help him look to the world and the situation with his eyes. What would he want you to do? How does he want you to act and to behave? And prayer always chases anger. Anger can make you pray, but once you start praying, the anger will go away. And instead of anger, you will get clarity. You will get balance. Because you let the Holy Spirit work in you, and the Holy Spirit is your compass, and he will guide you, and he will tell you what you can do. And then with his help, you'll be able to do so much more than what you'd be able to accomplish by just ranting in your Twitter feed. If you want to read a good and balanced reaction, check out the transcript of a reaction that Bishop Barron gave. As always, Bishop Barron is very balanced, very fair, and always brings the discussion to a deeper level. And on wordonfire.org, you can find an article. I'll link to it in the show notes. Read that. That's the kind of talk that we need right now. That's what's really bringing this further. Yeah, go check it out. He says it a lot better than I do. I need some distraction right now after this heavy topic. Let's go to the world of books. Do I have a jingle for that? I should have. I had one. Oh, here. There it is.
When did you become an expert in thermonuclear astrophysics?
Last night. The packet. The extraction theory papers. Am I the only one who did the reading?
Oh, during my vacation, I read The Prince's Bride. The book was on sale on Amazon, on the Kindle store, and I love the movie. It's one of those movies that no geek should fail to watch. It's a lot of fun. And I'm just reading this book, and it says on the cover, it's the abridged version of the original tale by so-and-so, what's his name, Morgenstern. And there is an introduction by the author, which is Goldman. And William Goldman writes that, you know, he was reading this story to his kid and he tried to find the book. And there are like two forewords. One is for the Jubilee edition and there's a previous one. And in the foreword, he's telling about his relationship with his wife, who's a shrink. And then he's got one son and he hopes that his son will also fall in love with the story of the Princess Bride. But then he starts reading it and he realizes, well, the story is actually kind of boring, the original story. So I'm just going to condense it and take the good parts and I'll tell that story. And then, you know, so I'm reading this whole introduction. And I'm falling for it hook, line, and sinker. I'm like, wow, I did not know that this was actually based on another story by this the other writer. And how come that I've never heard about him? And so I Google and it's like, I may be the only book that Morgenstern ever wrote. And then I was like, wow, I can't believe that this author is so personal about his, you know, his marriage, and then, you know, actually gets divorced according to this preface. And well, it's like, well, if I were had been married to him, I don't think I would like to hear the details about our failing relationship in the preface to, you know, one of his bestseller books. So I was like, well, this is kind of weird. But I'm still falling for it. And then I'm looking at the Wikipedia entry. And then it turns out that this entire autobiography that is part of the foreword is completely made up. It's fiction. It's completely fictional. There is not an original story by Morgan Stern. Morgan Stern is fictional. And so I'm reading this on Wikipedia. I'm laughing out loud. It's like, I can't believe that I fell for this. It's complete. It's a story within a story. It's fake news, but it's really good fake news because I totally believe that was true. So in reality, Goldman has two daughters, not a son. He's got two daughters, and his wife is not a psychiatrist. So it's really funny. And now it's been a while since I watched the movie. Now that I've read the book, I want to go back and I want to rewatch. And I only had the DVD. I don't think I have the Blu-ray. No, I don't have the Blu-ray. So now I want to get the Blu-ray and watch the Blu-ray. If only because, you know, it gives me another reason to go back and enjoy The Princess Bride. But oh my goodness, this added a new dimension to my enjoyment and the brilliance also of Goldman as a writer. It's like he totally made up his own life story and made me believe it. I mean, that is really, really impressive. Another book that I bought just today is a book about the Crusades. It's always a fascinating part of history. And a lot of people have these kind of really black and white, simplified ideas of what the Crusades were. I found a book by Thomas Asbridge, is a British historian. And he wrote The Authoritative History of the War for the Holy Land. So the Crusades is the abbreviated title. It's currently on sale when I'm recording this. I don't know if it will be on sale. It has been on sale before. I remember seeing it for the same price and didn't buy it back then. But since during my vacation in Spain, we saw a lot of church history. It kind of like resuscitated, is that a word? Or is that French? I don't know. Sometimes another language seeps in. But it rekindled my... That's a good word, actually, in this context. It rekindled my interest in church history. And so I saw this book on sale for just $199. It's on the U.S. Kindle store. And then the audiobook, if you buy a Kindle book, usually you get a big discount on the Audible version. Normally, if you just buy the Audible book, for this book alone, for this audiobook, it's $55. If you buy it in conjunction with this book that is on sale, it's only $12.99. So for $14.98, that's $15. I've got like the full book, and it's like 900 pages. It's very well written. And I've got the narration, the audible narration by Derek Perkins. Perkins makes me think of Parks and Recreation. Ann Perkins. 25 hours and 32 minutes of audio. And before I buy an Audible book, I always listen to the excerpt. And in this case, it was five minutes. So I press play. I start listening and I'm thinking, oh, this is not a dry, boring history book. This sounds really well written and it's like a page turner. I'm only listening to 5 minutes of audio. And then, of course, it fades out because it's just a sample. And I was like, but what happens next? That's when I knew I had to press the button for the Audible version as well. Because, dude, this is really well done. And but 25 hours and 32 minutes. I think I have to train for a lot more marathons in order to finish that. But I love audiobooks because, especially in conjunction with Kindle books, I can read certain parts and then I can switch to audio when I'm doing something else, and you can switch back and forth and it will remember where you are. That's one of the... Because you might say, well, I'll just buy the book and read that, and it's only $1.99. But I like to be able to continue the story whatever I'm doing. As long as I'm not watching TV, I can basically consume audiobooks. That's what I want to share with you. I'll include a link to the Crusades book in the show notes again. Hopefully it's still on sale. Go check it out. And with that, I think it is time to talk about health. Oh, wait. That's the other jingle.
Just look at the x-rays. You see that dark spot there? Whiplash.
Whiplash? Oh, no.
And this smudge here that looks like my fingerprint? No, that's trauma.
Short update on my health. Before my vacation, I was struggling quite a bit with fatigue, etc. I was taking vitamin D supplements, and that helped quite a bit. I changed my diet to keto, lost a ton of weight. I was really kind of apprehensive of my vacation because I'm like, how can I live a healthy life while I'm on vacation? First of all, I knew running was going to be hard because I'm going to be in the mountains. How can I train for a marathon when I'm in the mountains? Well, turns out when I drove to the beach, I could run for 20 miles, which I did. 20 miles! That was the biggest distance that I trained for so far. And but I was able to do that on a Sunday of all days. Mass was a bit hard to stay away because I was so tired and I left home at 6 in the morning. So that was no problem. And keto was also no problem because, well, Spanish food is actually pretty low carb by itself. And so since I was used to not having breakfast, I could just eat and make my choices based on, you know, my keto choices. So actually I had a very, very healthy vacation when I came back. Normally when I've been on vacation, I step on the scales and it's like, okay, I can see where all the sausages went. And I always gain a number of pounds, if not kilograms. In this case, I lost even more pounds. So since this summertime alone, and I'm talking about the months of June, July, August, in total, I lost 10 kilograms, which is 22 American pounds, just during the summertime. And I have to say, I feel so much lighter. I feel so good and healthy. I still have a few pounds more to lose to have the ideal running weight for my marathon in Amsterdam, but I'm almost there. And I'm also past the halfway point of the running, of the training schedule. It's looking good. I'm feeling better than I've felt in a very long time.
We are on the cutting edge of technology.
Wow. Well, what does that mean?
Let's plug it in. It's going to say, hey, I see you've plugged in a new device. And it's going to load in the appropriate drivers. You'll notice that this scanner built... Whoa.
Well, all your technology stuff, it just ends in disaster.
But there is one more thing.
Yeah, it's technology season again. We've got the IFA in Germany right now going on as I record this. So we got a lot of new phones that are presented. There was one phone that was interesting. It's a new LG phone. LG, to me, is very interesting. It's an Android phone. LG doesn't have a very stellar reputation, especially when it comes to updates. So the hardware is pretty good, but they don't update it, and you have to wait forever. It's kind of the downside of Android. With Apple can just push out an update of the operating system, and like a day later, 80% of the Apple owners will have that update. Not so with Android. There's a myriad of different devices, and sometimes devices won't get updated. And LG was notorious for that. What made LG so interesting to me as a filmmaker is that they have the best camera app. I mean, it's unbelievable. LG, first of all, they put wide-angle lenses in their phones, which is always good to have wide-angle. Tele-lens, zoom, that's not really that important. If you want to get closer to something, it'll just move. You'll just walk. But it's very hard, especially if you're like me, often in other countries, and there's architecture or nature. Wide-angle is priceless. So it's one of the few manufacturers that put wide angles in their phones. Plus, they have camera software that has professional functions like S-Log. You know, you can film in a format that's used in professional TV production. It has like a Zebra. So it's usually very hard to judge whether something is too bright or not. With zebra, you can actually have these little diagonal lines on the parts that are overexposed, and then you can dial back your exposure. It's better to underexpose than to overexpose. Same thing with sharpness. That software is able to show you with a color what is sharp. This is very hard to judge from just your phone screen, especially if you've got sunlight even on the screen. Really, really hard. So they do a terrific job, but I've always been like, I don't know, they're kind of expensive. Plus, no updates. I'm spoiled by Apple. Well, it turns out that on the IFA 2018 floor, they presented a new phone, actually a number of new phones, but one particularly is really interesting. It's an Android One phone. Android One is a program that Google launched where basically the phones of different manufacturers have to be approved by Google and will get updates as soon as they're available. So they're no longer dependent on your local, either on the provider of the phone or the manufacturer of the phone. So and they will guarantee 3 years of updates plus security updates. So that is actually a very, very good reason to go for Android One compared to all the other phones that may be cheaper, maybe more advanced, may have more gadgets and bells and whistles. But if you don't get updates, you're basically in a very insecure, unsafe environment over time, which is not the case with Apple. So I was really curious to see. The price is not known yet, but that may actually be a phone that I'm going to use for on-the-fly filming. There's another device that I'm going to show my patrons later on in the after show, which was sent to me by Rob, and which is also giving me new abilities when it comes to on-the-fly, phone video videography. Then there were leaks of the upcoming September 12 Apple event. Some photos leaked out of golden iPhones and also an Apple Watch with a much bigger screen, so smaller bezels. And somebody noticed that there is actually a UV sensor in the watch, which I think could be very useful because, sunshine, radiation, skin cancer, it's a big problem. And so having your watch warn you, especially because it's used a lot for people that go outdoors, get out of the sun. It's getting dangerous right now. And having your watch being able to sense that, I think that's a really great addition, which is probably not that expensive for Apple to add, but it will enhance the functionality of the watch. The only other thing that I'm really interested in for the Apple presentation is the iPads. I can't wait to see what they will do. I hope the iPads will have smaller bezels. It's one of the only things that I don't like about my current iPad is the big, massive bezels. If they can reduce that, then I may actually consider getting a new one. Google Assistant goes bilingual. So Google Assistant is now able to understand two languages at the same time. So you can speak English and Spanish, for instance. Hopefully in the future also Dutch. Then there is also a new version of Wear OS, which is the mobile operating system for your watch. Haven't checked it out. My Wear OS watch hasn't updated yet, but I'll let you know in the next show. Meanwhile, on Mars, there's a new chance for the 14-year-old mission of Opportunity, one of those Mars rovers, because the dust storms have finally settled down, and now they're trying to recharge the solar panels on the rover, and hopefully it will reboot again. 14 years. Unbelievable. Nobody expected to be this rover program to be this successful. And then finally, I read that Lego is now working on making its product sustainable. There's a link in the show notes if you want to read that article. And with that, I think we've come to the end of our show. Thank you for bearing with me. In a while, I'll start recording my after show. I didn't think I had much to talk about this show, but turns out 1 hour and 8 minutes. Where did the time go? Anyway, thank you so much for hanging out with me. Thanks to my patrons. If you want to become a patron, go over to patreon.com/FatherRoderick. And I will see you next week. Have a great week and a great weekend.